From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan, and I'm here with Stephen Thompson. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Bob.
So this morning we come into work, and God, it was just awful, right? We had a band play at our desk again.
Just another day in the mines.
Yes, Fountains of Wayne came and played, and they're so much fun, right?
They were fantastic.
And we started this series, this Tiny Desk Concert Series. It's almost been 3.5 years. We've done what? Nearly?
More than 150. I count when we publish them, but we've got so many that we haven't even put out there. We've got an opera Tiny Desk Concert we haven't published. We've got...
A pipe organ.
Yes. Today at work, somebody will be tuning a pipe organ. You know, it beats working in the mines. I'm gonna tell you that right now.
So I thought it would be nice to just sort of gather for lots of people who have joined us over the years, didn't know about the series, an opportunity to just pick highlights, just things that really come to mind as like great stories, just great moments. And one band that comes to mind like right away that brought so much fun to the crew. I mean, people from the news division come up.
Yeah, we invite everybody in the building.
Right, so they should be probably doing All Things Considered.
Right.
And up they come to see the band Gogo Bordello.
Yeah. Okay?
and boy, did some of them return to work a little bit.
If you're wondering why in the gap when All Things Considered was supposed to air, there was just a long patch of silence a couple of years ago.
I remember saying to Eugene, the singer of the band, the little leader, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eugene Hutz.
Yep.
I said, do you guys need something to drink? And out of a big paper bag, he pulls a very chilled huge bottle of vodka and says, do you have glasses? And proceeded to pour and pour and pour. By the middle of the concert, he was on many desks.
He was dancing. He was on several desks and kissed at least one NPR staffer who will remain nameless on the mouth before the day was over. Fortunately, everyone's mouths were nice and sterile.
So
from all the vodka.
How about if we give a listen to something from the Gogo Bordello?
Absolutely.
Tiny Desk Concert.
Yeah.
I mean,
just sitting here listening to it, you just get this gigantic grin on your face. And I think every time you feel like the weight of the world and just the workaday life, you know, starts to get to you, just pop on that Gogo Bordello and just remember that you could climb up on your desk and just scream, start wearing purple! And, you know, you don't have to, but you could. Knowing you could.
That's right.
It's half the battle.
And we started the series with a sort of a very meek Laura Gibson.
Yeah, the idea behind the series was this is where we're going to put the really quiet people. We're going to get your folk singers, we're going to get your strummers, we're going to get your whisperers.
And new folks that maybe just didn't warrant an entire evening of a concert.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily
music.
Yeah, they weren't going to get booked into the 9:30 club. They weren't, you know, they're quieter, they're up and comers. We figured we'll have them come and play at Bob's desk, and it'll be pretty and quiet. And then Chuck Brown, not the first noisy artist to play the tiny desk, but I believe still stands as the biggest band that has ever played behind the tiny desk.
They had a full drum kit.
Mm-hmm.
More than a few percussionists.
Yep.
They had their own vocal section.
Yeah, they had
a
fleet of backup singers. Kevin Waite, our engineer, and we cannot let the episode go by without singing the praises of Kevin Waite, who is a brilliant audio engineer. He was setting up amplifiers and a mixing board, and that's when you realize your office has become a full-fledged club. And, so Chuck Brown is the godfather of go-go music, based here in Washington, D.C., and a huge legend here, did not strip his sound down for the occasion whatsoever. And because he's Chuck Brown, we indulged his every whim. And so, one of the songs he played for us would be his signature hit, Bustin' Loose.
Down there is going to give us a little play here, ladies and gentlemen. One, two, and a three. Hit it.
Everything about this was big.
It really was. And just imagine, you know, while this is going on, like 4 feet away from you, there's your computer in front of you and people are emailing you.
I worked, our building is on 7th Street, between 6th and 7th Street, and I worked on 7th Street, further south on 7th Street, at a record store called The Wiz at the time, and we used to blast Chuck Brown with big speakers out the door, and you never thought
when you started working at NPR that you would get a chance to do it again.
In an office. I mean, you could barely confine this guy.
Yeah.
Big parties, big go-go music, Chuck Brown. Other big acts we've done, and I don't mean big in popularity, because at the time we did Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, they were popular, but they weren't...
They played a small club that night. They were not yet a gigantic...
There were probably 45, 65 people in that club.
That's just in the band.
and they came back the next day wearing the very same clothes that we saw the night before.
Streaming out of a recently broken down old bus that they were tooling around
in. And it was
in.
Much like for the manager of that band, definitely herding cats, trying to get more of their 13 Edward Sharpers?
Or 10, maybe 10? 10, okay. 10, yeah.
And they came and did, I think, for the Tiny Desk concert, somewhat of a turning point in the size of our audience, because at the time, Home was sort of an up-and-coming song.
You were suddenly hearing that song everywhere by the time we got to
And you could see who these people were in a very unusual
a very unusual-looking crop of very, very committed musicians and just this sort of beautiful communal vibe to them that really comes through, very much comes through in this Tiny Desk concert.
Let's give a listen to Home then. What do you think?
Oh, sure.
Jungle through the dark, girl, I never love one like you.
It is a sight to behold.
That's when you suddenly realize, like, boy, you know, we're originally in the audio business here, but having a picture to go with these things, you know, all of these are available online as videos and are downloadable at that.
And for a while, we had the Tiny Desk Concerts in our live concert podcast, which is a podcast filled with musical concerts, because we had no place to put it. And then we realized, you know, we are feeding big megabits of information down people's throats, whether they want it or not. So we split it off. We started a Tiny Desk concert video podcast only, which has been like one of the most successful video podcasts in iTunes since it started.
It's not just an audio world anymore here at NPR, and they're sweet to look at.
The Avett brothers came in.
speaking of sweet to look at,
yes.
Hi-yo.
And there are two acts that come to mind right away in terms of, like, projecting voice.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the tallest man on earth.
Oh, yeah.
The skinniest. His pants. No, never mind. We won't go down that road. But largest voice for someone that small I've ever heard.
Yeah, and his pants really should be sleeves.
And then the Avett brothers, who,
yeah,
the volume.
Oh,
of
man.
The
Avett Brothers Tiny Desk Concert felt to me like just a huge turning point for the series. And I don't mean to be sitting here like smoking a pipe and being all like, well, the Tiny Desk Concert historian, but that Avett Brothers concert was one of those like, well, remember when the idea was for these to be quiet? Unbelievable volume, unbelievable power.
No electric either. It was a stand-up
bass, a cello, acoustic guitar, and a banjo.
It was mournfully out of tune a lot. However, that said, it didn't matter.
I mean, did not.
Yeah.
This is probably the individual song performance at a Tiny Desk concert that I've listened to the most of the entire series. Let's listen to Laundry Room.
Thank you.
Banjo be damned. It still sounds great.
To me, what really jumps out about that one, I love the record that I Am Loving You, that they put out around this time. But the studio version of that song just sounds so flat to me by comparison. I've just, it actually, it's so good, it ruined the studio version of the song for me.
You know, one other performance that was equally, if not better, than the record was Adele. Remember that?
Oh, man. Adele came in at the beginning of this year, right when 21 was coming out.
It hadn't even come out yet, right?
I believe it hadn't come out yet.
We'd been chasing Adele for 3 years. She was going to play our South by Southwest coverage in
2008.
Right, at the Parish. And at the last minute, she had visa troubles and couldn't make it.
Yep.
And we were hoping and hoping. And then this opportunity came. Her first record did really well, but this record.
Yeah, this thing, I mean, 21, we saw her come in before 21 came out, and hearing her, you know, with obviously no effects on her voice. I mean, that's one of the, you strip away any opportunity to enhance a voice. And it's one reason singers are often so terrified when they come in and do these. Having her come in and just this roar, this incredibly powerful voice, singing these terrific new songs.
Robin Hilton told me, he sits across at the time, he said it hurt his ears.
And at one point she was like, can you hear me? You know, it's like, well, sense from the trickle of blood coming out of our ears, then yes, we can.
Let's give a listen. What do you want to hear?
Let's hear, I mean, the performance of Someone Like You is unbelievable. Let's do that one.
Okay.
I heard that you're settled down, that you found a girl and you're married now. I heard that your dreams came true, guess she gave you things I didn't give to you. Old friend, why are you so shy? It ain't like you to hold back or hide from the light. I hate to turn up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away, I couldn't fight it. I'd hoped you'd see my face and that you'd be reminded that for me it isn't over. Never mind, I'll find someone like you. Sometimes it lasts in love, but sometimes it hurts in stage. Nothing compares, no worries or cares, regrets and mistakes, their memories made. Who would have known how bittersweet this would taste? Never mind, I'll find someone like you. I wish nothing but the best for you too. Don't forget me, I beg. I'll remember you said. Sometimes it lasts in love, but sometimes it hurts instead. Never mind, I'll find someone like you. Sometimes it hurts instead, yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much.
I was like performers whose speaking voice is so different, such a disconnect from their singing voice, and she is that.
She also has this absolutely magnificent cackle.
That's right.
Like right at the end of the set, she's like, "Forgot to take my gloves off!" You just can't believe that this incredibly delicate instrument is also tuned to that cackle. Marvelous, marvelous performance.
You were talking a minute ago about how the vocalists come in and there's no, and it's stripped down. There's no reverb. Mm-hmm. They don't even hold a microphone. This is the crutch of every single singer. You hold this microphone.
Right. So, I mean, you sometimes have singers who really don't know what to do with their hands.
Tom Jones came in. And Tom Jones is the most seasoned of maybe all the singers.
Yeah, that's as seasoned a pro as you're going to find.
And he was scared. Honestly. I mean, he sweated like crazy. There weren't any lights.
No distance.
Our intern was sitting maybe 2.5 feet from him.
Partially because, you know.
Well,
if you can be that close to Tom Jones.
His son was with him and kept coming up to him, wiping his brow with a handkerchief and handing him, you know, maybe notes or suggestions for the next song. And all he came with was one single, I didn't know how he was going to do this. He came with one single guitar player. I imagined he was going to come with a backing track or something. I mean, I didn't know how he was going to do this. And the single guitar player and Tom Jones' voice was absolutely astonishing. I was honestly never a big fan of Tom Jones, mm-hmm. always an admirer of what he did. I was sold that day.
Well, part of it is just his voice had lost nothing. he sounded like a young Tom Jones, and you know, at that time he was in his late 60s, and just sounded amazing.
Let's play something from his earlier period, "The Green Green Grass of Home," a song that I had no appreciation for when I was about 13 years old, and came to finally, after so many years, get this song.
Nice.
The old hometown looks the same as I step down from the train, and there to meet me is my mama and papa. Down the road I look, and there runs Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch
the green, green grass of home. Yes, they'll all come to meet me, arms reaching, smiling sweetly. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. The old house is still standing, though the paint is cracked and dry. And there's that old oak tree that I used to play on. Down the lane I walk with my sweet Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. Then I awake and look around me at four gray walls that surround me. And then I realize, yes, I was only dreaming. For you see, there's a God, and there is a sad old padre. Arm in arm, we'll walk at daybreak. Then I will touch the green, green grass. Yes, they'll all come to see me in the shade of that old oak tree as they lay me neath the green, green grass of home. Thank you. Oh. Thank you very much.
I mean, he was so happy when that was over.
Yeah. It's so hard to pull off. You just can't imagine that somebody has probably sung that song, you know, 1,000 times. Wouldn't be an exaggeration.
Right. No, and is used to every time he performs it, there is a thundering, distant, rumbling ovation from you know, 100 feet away,
yeah.
Instead of like all these distinct faces that you can focus on all these individual faces of people who, you know, obviously in Tom Jones's case, they're wrapped, but in a lot of these cases, those people may or may not have ever even heard of you. You know, we call people up, you know, we page the whole building and we say, you know, hey, you know, come over and check out this band. And in some cases, it's just a complete mystery.
That's right. So someone like a group like Buchengase, even just saying the name, the people...
Yeah, Buchengase.
Yeah, right. A baritone ukulele, which is the buke, B-U-K-E, baritone ukulele. And then the Gase is the guitar-bass hybrid. And these are two old friends who've been playing music for a long time. Super powerful,
yeah,
powerful one, angular
this
music.
This is another loud one.
Yes. This is where the work stops.
Thank you.
You know, thank you for having heard of us.
And they're saying, you know, thank you to Lars. Lars Gotrich is sitting probably the distance I'm sitting from you. He's probably sitting
five feet
away most. We have a.
If you ever see a gigantic blonde head
<that's right>.
getting in the shot, it's usually that would be Lars.
And the whole desk area looks bigger on camera than it is. I'm not making this up, right? You see it on camera, and people come and look at it. Oh, that's it?
Yeah, it's basically a block of four desks, all of which face into each other. So I have to stare at Bob's mug all day long.
And behind me, I wheel my chair out when the bands come. And behind me in this area that is no more than, the depth of that is no more than 5 feet, maybe mm-hmm. six.
Maybe
six, and maybe 6 feet wide.
And then there's a bunch of CD shelving and stuff behind you, and it's the sort of place you would expect a guy like Bob Boylan to sit.
And for Phoenix to come in and play.
And to have, yeah, we had the band, the French pop band Phoenix, come in, was it a couple summers ago?
Yeah.
We have to turn off the air conditioning units when the bands start to perform, because you'll get a low hum, you know, if you know, we leave them on.
And we have the sunlight pours in the windows.
And we have gigantic picture windows, sort of like ants under a magnifying glass, with no air conditioning, and probably 150 people streaming in to see Phoenix, one of the biggest bands we've had.
What are all those people supposed to be doing is what I always want to know.
Like, just imagine the engines of NPR just wheezing to a halt for about 10 minutes when Phoenix came in, which I believe, based on the statistics on our YouTube channel, is the most viewed Tiny Desk concert of all time. Let's hear Listomania by Phoenix.
You know, there's a news show on at 4 o'clock, but I think it's going to start late. Thanks for coming and doing this.
Everybody, Phoenix.
So sentimental, not sentimental, no. Romantic, not disgusting yet. Darling, I'm down and lonely. When with a fortunate only, I've been looking for something else. These days it comes, it comes, it comes, it comes, it comes and goes. A listomania, think less but see it grow. I like a ride, oh. Not easily offended, not let it go. From a mess to the masses, a listomania, think less but see it grow. Like a ride, oh. Not easily offended, not let it go. From a mess to the masses, follow misguided and still discourage. On this precious weekend and in this love for gentlemen only, wealthy is gentlemen only. And now that you're lonely, do let, juggle it, do let's go slowly. Open the pictures instead. When it's all over, we can barely discuss for 1 minute only. Not with a fortunate only. Though I gotta be someone else. These days it comes, it comes, it comes, it comes, it comes and goes. A listomania, think less but see it grow. I like a ride, oh. Not easily offended, not let it go. From a mess to the masses, a listomania, think less but see it grow. I like a ride, oh. Discuss, 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 discourage.
Thank you.
So you get someone as popular as Phoenix coming in, and then
That's when you realize how many NPR staffers want to impress their kids. All of a sudden you see all these kids, you know.
We do. It becomes a family affair for sure.
Which is awesome. I like to think, I mean, both of my kids, their first ever concert experiences were Tiny Desk concerts.
Oh, that's awesome.
Jonah saw Sam Phillips and Grace saw Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros.
And that's my son's been doing video editing.
Your son's been editing these things.
He was in today. It's summertime. So I was standing there and I had to run audio today. And I said, oh, how can I run the third camera and the audio?
Julian!
There he was.
He's helped keep that series alive.
Yes, indeed. So I was thinking about how I get turned on to music, too. We have this big team of people in NPR Music. It's not just me or it's not just you picking or Robin Hilton picking the bands that come. I have a big team of people. And so sometimes people bring in musicians I've never even heard of. We had this phenomenal harpist who I'd never heard of, Edmar Castaneda. I just could not believe watching this man and watching his fingers. And I've gone back over and over and and
a Colombian harpist.
Yes. Jazz harpist.
Jazz harpist. The number of discoveries I've made, this great Malian giant named Kyra Arby, this a cappella group called Stile Antico, which is like 12 or 13 a cappella singers who just this choir of angels. The wonderful Brazilian singer, So Jorge.
Talk
about a transporting set. Mavis Staples coming through. She immediately, you know, kind of this regal presence kind of sweeping into the office, and she was like the mayor. You know, everyone was just, people were just following her. This group called the Holmes Brothers, this wonderful, warm soul music. Weird Al Yankovic.
Sorry.
we had Weird Al Yankovic. Jimmy Cliff. You know, you talk about the, you know, I mean, just a giant. Mount Kimby. You know, this dubstep duo with this, you know, incredible...
A table full of electronics. We put a camera about 8 feet above the table, above my desk, where they completely taken over my desk with wires, and it looked like my house.
Yeah, it looked like the inside of Bob's brain. There's all these wires that led to God knows what. Pokey Lafarge in the South City 3, you know, where the just this wonderful old-timey racket. I mean, we've had several like amazing kora players, and you know, all these the great pipa virtuoso, Wuman.
She was unbelievable.
Lars Gotrich was throwing up the devil horns.
That's right.
During rehearsal.
Why don't we play a little bit of Wuman? Because there was, I think, anyone who's into any kind of virtuosity in music, certainly into the guitar, if you don't see what instruments he's playing, you could think it's guitar, you should go watch it, because there's something going on that doesn't really look humanly possible that this woman does. But it sure sounds remarkable. Let's listen to Wuman.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know how those fingers do what they do, but it's quite remarkable.
Well, that's one of the most exciting things you get is sometimes just these performances you almost need to see to believe. You know, you might hear a record and you just figure, oh, you know, maybe that's effects, maybe that's sped up, maybe that's, you know, whatever. Maybe it took them 500 tries to play that quickly. But another group that jumps immediately to mind in terms of like unbelievable
virtuosity
with hands on strings is the duo of Rodrigo y Gabriela, which there are no words,
and we saw them in a very small setting. I was super surprised when we did Sasquatch. They played the big stage at Sasquatch, and they completely captivated
people,
thousands and thousands and thousands of people with instrumental music from
on acoustic guitars,
on nylon string guitars.
Yeah, people went ape.
Yeah,
for Rodrigo y Gabriela at Sasquatch.
Yeah.
And you could, I was at home, and it through my little computer speakers, there was just a roar.
Yeah,
people were stunned. So let's listen to a little bit of Rodrigo y Gabriela. Let's listen to Hanuman.
Thank you.
absolute intensity. These two, their interplay, it's music that really is at its heart, I think, heavy metal and flamenco.
And that's their roots. They played in metal bands and somehow found a way to fuse it with flamenco music.
On nylon strings.
And it's so, that's one of those things where I feel like the target audience for that is just anybody.
Yeah.
You just have to love that. You have to not only admire it, but it's so enjoyable.
Let's play something from Swell Season, because Swell Season came in. First of all, Glenn and Marchetta wouldn't stop playing. we often say three songs because we want them to just be very small, intimate.
Well, part of it is we're making these videos available as a free podcast, but they take, you know, I mean, the files are probably 150 megabytes, you know, so if they play for, you know, if they play too long, it just becomes this massive, massive file for people. We like the idea that it's a little bit of a sampler, you know, so you can spend 10, 12, 15 minutes with an artist. You don't have to make this gigantic investment. So we really want to help people sort of discover music. And that's certainly a bite, you know, sort of a bite-sized dose. But Glenn Hansard and Marchetta Urglova, can we play two more songs? sure. And they ended up playing seven songs in 33-34 minutes.
Yeah. My favorite of all the things that anyone has ever said standing behind my desk, I'd probably have to go with Tao Nguyen, who, when we were all done, we were walking down the hall. I said, "It's kind of awkward, wasn't it?" She said, "Yeah, it's also kind of intimate too." And then she looks at me and she said, "Kind of a lot like my old boyfriend."
Which is always the effect we're going for.
Yes. But it is awkward and intimate. It's those two things at the very same time for the performer.
Well, and you know, and that's sort of how, you know, how you and I originally conceived this idea. You know, we wanted to bring in these intimate performers. I mean, we've told the story a million times, probably even on this podcast, of what inspired it was seeing Laura Gibson, this very, very quiet singer, perform a very quiet set in front of a very noisy audience, and how the effect of the concert was just ruined by all this additional noise. You know, so that sort of awkward intimacy was kind of the germ of the idea was, you know, let's get something where we kind of control the environment, but you still have that energy of live performance.
And energy it was with Glenn.
And Glenn Hansard is Hurricane Glenn. just came in and swept everybody off their feet. And that's still probably my, I mean, I'm biased in favor of that guy's music to begin with, but that's probably my favorite Tiny Desk concert.
There is that one moment in When Your Mind's Made Up, where it builds to a explosive guitar moment.
Yeah, he's just beating on that signature beat up guitar, and just getting more and more and more. You can see little bits of his guitar flying away, and then
it stops, and then he goes, "So."
And there's this laugh. There's like this nerve, this build up of a sort of nervous tension that then dissolves into laughter.
Right, because there's so much rage at that moment in his performance.
And you realize like how much command he has.
That's it.
Cool.
Thanks, Stephen. More concerts to come.
That's right.
We got a big New Orleans band coming on Wednesday.
That's right. Trombone Shorty.
Thanks so much for doing this.
It's a real pleasure. This is brilliant. It's
awesome.
It's so much. Yeah, it's great.
For NPR Music, I'm Bob Boylan, along with Stephen Thompson. It's All Songs Considered.
So, if you ever want something, you call, then I'll come running to fight, and I'll be at your door when there's no one worth running for. When your mind's made up, when your mind's made up, there's no like everyone. When the shit falls, all you wanna do is run away and hide all by yourself. Well, there's no one who's gonna run to help. When your mind's made up, when your mind's made up, there's no point trying to fight it. When your mind's made up, when your mind's made up, there's no point. You ever want something and you call, then I'll come running.
Thank you.
Beautiful, really enjoyed it.